This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Greetings and welcome to Carlisle ValueCast. I'm Chris Ullman, head of Carlisle's Global Communications. Thank you for joining us on this latest installment of our Three Questions podcast series. And our guest today is Marco De Benedetti, co-head of our Europe buyout team. Welcome, Marco.
Hi, Chris, and thank you for having me.
First question, what does Brexit mean for investing in the UK?
Well, Brexit certainly was a big surprise. I think most people did not see it coming. I don't believe it's going to be such a dramatic event going forward. I think the UK will remain, for private equity, a very large market, the largest market in Europe. The debt market shut down for about a week just around Brexit. We were able to execute a couple of transactions following that. And those dislocations often actually represent very interesting opportunities for us.
So do you think Brexit's even going to happen?
I think, first of all, the big difficulty is to understand what Brexit is. It never happened before. In the history of the European Union, no country ever left. We had a number of countries that joined the Union, but no one left. So this is an uncharted territory. There is a provision in one of the European treaties, the Treaty of Lisbon, that provides the possibility for a country to leave. It's this famous Article 50 that needs to be invoked by a country. At that point, the negotiations start between the member country and the European Union. The recently appointed Prime Minister in the UK, Theresa May, indicated that she's most likely going to invoke that Article 50 in the first quarter of next year. From that point, there is a two-year period. And there is an interesting provision in the treaty that says that there is a two-year period and it's a drop-dead date. Whatever is negotiated at the end of the two-year period is the status of the affairs. I think the UK will not have a very strong hand in those negotiations. I think the European Union will do everything it can to show other countries that it's a painful thing to do. And if the UK gets too much of a nice deal, that would be something that other countries might think of following. So I think it will happen. Something will happen. And some sort of relationship between the UK and the European Union, which is different than the one that we have today. One of the things that number of observers have pointed out is the risk of the brain drain. If you think about the financial service industry, for example, it's been a big hub in Europe, and it is the financial capital of Europe. And the concern is that following Brexit, that would be a reverse trend of that flow. The reality is that the UK attracted a number of people in our industry, in the hedge fund industry, and in the financial services industry in general. Other capitals in Europe, you can think of Frankfurt, you can think of Brussels or Paris, have the ambition to gain a little bit the role of financial capital of Europe. I think it's going to be a difficult thing to do. The infrastructure is not there, and there is a risk, but I think at the end of the day, London will remain the financial center of Europe.
Question two, there's been an increase in investing in Spain and Italy. Why is that?
Well, we have seen Italy and Spain being the two most active countries in Europe over the last, I would say, 24 months. I believe that one of the reasons is that those are the two countries that suffered the most after the Great Recession, and the two countries that took the longest to go back to, you know, a normal state and some sort of growth. They are now doing that. A number of reforms took place. And if you look, for example, at Spain, it's in Europe the economy that is growing the fastest. There are a number of transactions that did not occur in the early days, and they're now all coming to market. So kind of a pent-up demand that is now coming to market. We have executed three transactions in those countries in the last 12 months, and we have a number of others that we're seeing. So we think that will continue. There's kind of a catch-up that those countries need to do.
Question three, how do you feel about the consumer retail space in Europe?
The consumer retail space, I think, is a fascinating space. You have on the one side an overall positive trend. The European consumer is in pretty good shape, suffered after the Great Recession, but now it's in a pretty good shape. So you have an overall positive market. But what I find most fascinating is the changes that are happening. I mean, consumers are shopping in a different manner. If you think of what the internet has done today, it's nothing to relative to what it will do in the future. So there are going to be continuous changes. Think how about the millennials, the Generation X change. That is going to be a fascinating space, in my view. There will be winners and losers. There are some companies that understand that and know how to operate in that space, and others that will just follow and they will, you know, there's going to be a long decline. So whenever there are those changes, I think there's fantastic opportunities if you're able to identify the right players.
So does the internet mean the death of brick-and-mortar traditional stores?
Well, in the last few years, we've seen the internet in the retail space taking a large role. I don't think it's black or white. I don't think it's either internet or bricks and mortar. I think for a number of categories is really the ability to combine the two things because people still want to see, they want to try. Think about the apparel world, for example. And I think that the companies that are doing the best are those that are able to really combine those two channels in a pretty seamless way. Consumers, they use their smartphones while they are in the shop. So it's a contiguous thing. I don't think it should be seen as two separate silos, but it's a shopping experience that combines the aspect of the physical store with the online. And it is that omni-channel, that's the buzzword that we use in that industry, that is really going to be the new reality in that space. One example is a company we invested in. It's a lingerie brand started in Holland called Hunkemöller, today operating in all of Northern Europe. You should think it of the Victoria's Secret of Europe. And one of the things that this company was very good at is really managing that omni-channel. Today, online sales represent over 14% of the revenue, which for European standards is pretty high. But it's really an integrated approach. And the consumers sometimes, they pick up the products in the store or they see it in the stores and then they get shipped it online at home. So it's a really seamless experience. And I think that is really the key. I'm not sure that the consumers want to have, you know, either or, but it's really the integration of the two channels, the physical one and the online, that is going to be the key for the future.
Marco, thank you for sharing your thoughts on the European investment climate. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us on Carlyle ValueCast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.